If you're having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Jesus, Dad. That is really mean to say.
Just saying, if you ever have girl problems, me and your mom always seem to make it work,
don't call mom a bitch. Am I decoding that right? I'm bad as syntax.
Hey everybody, how's it going? My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Crack.com, and this is my co-host and sound guy,
Michael Swaim.
And we're going to be your co-hosts appropriately our first podcast, which the subject is generation gaps.
Why? No one even uses that term anymore, really.
I know. I never really saw what the big deal was with generation gaps. I always thought it was somewhat overblown. My parents named the place where we bought our corduroy pants and mock turtlenecks the Gap. As if to signify that people were talking about the generation gap so much that they needed to give it a nickname.
Wait, am I following that? Your parents coined the name The Gap?
My parents' generation. Come on,
generation.
Man. We're talking generations.
All right,
I'm talking about my generation.
I'm on a lot of pills. I'm losing words.
I know. But it seems to be like personal privacy in baseball, one of those things.
I don't know what those things are.
Right, because you're young and hip and cool.
So hip.
And just in general, it seems like you guys have stopped really giving a shit about generation gaps. You're just...
Yeah, we're all just internet avatars
right now.
And mostly everyone's lying about their age, so it's fine.
Right. Or so we thought.
Yeah.
First, we're going to illustrate sort of something that all generations seem to have in common. We asked the hosts of some of our favorite Earwolf podcasts to weigh in on a subject that every generation seems to have in common, a shared desire to believe that one of our biggest pop stars had to have a scientifically impossible amount of semen pumped out of their stomach. See?
Okay, and this is going to prove that the generation gap is a real thing.
This is going to prove
because
that there are subtle differences.
Because I've trusted you on semen stuff before, and it's not worked out for me, but this is...
It's going to prove that there are subtle differences between the generations.
Okay.
But that we all kind of share a unifying experience and, you know, we're all part of the same human race.
All right.
Before we just blow that all to hell prove that we're totally unlike one another.
All right. So, so we asked a bunch of our favorite Earwolf folks about semen. This is who we tricked into talking about semen for us on our first show.
So, how? What celebrity did you hear had to have semen pumped out of their stomach?
Oh, that's for forever a Rod Stewart or a Richard Gere, but mostly a Rod Stewart.
I remember Jordan Knight from New Kids on the Block.
Well, that actually was not a rumor. That was true. All five of them were surviving on each other for a long time.
I have only heard it being Rod Stewart. When I think about the celebrity that has gotten caught, I've only heard it be Rod Stewart. You know, I don't know where I first heard this story. It's like one of these things that I've just always known. Like, did you hear that Rod Stewart had to have a bunch of semen pumped out of his stomach? Yeah, I heard that. I don't know where I heard it, but I have always known that.
What celebrity, Randy, did you hear had to have semen pumped out of his or her stomach?
Queen Elizabeth.
I was going to say Jose Canseco.
What is Brian Posehn, Alex?
Well, I'm not really a celebrity.
What is that's correct, Brian?
I think Brian would want to keep it in his stomach.
Why do you think you and your classmates wanted to believe that particular celebrity had a scientifically impossible amount of semen in their stomach?
Why did I want to believe that?
Yeah, why? Why? I mean, it can't.
Oh, I don't know. I heard that as a kid, and you just figure, oh, if it's true and if it's about sex, it must be true.
I don't know why it was never questioned. It really, the science of it is shaky at best. But I think you just take a look at Rod Stewart. You know what it is? That story brings Rod Stewart down a peg. You know, you look at Rod Stewart and you think, oh, that's the ultimate rock star. You see him, he's singing, "Do You Think I'm Sexy?" He's, you know, dating models. He's got that big rock star hair. But you want him to kind of just be like anyone else. So the idea that even Rod Stewart has to go to the emergency room and deal with something embarrassing, I think that that's what it is. It brought Rod Stewart down to our level. Like, well, he may be a rock star, but at least I never had to go to the hospital because I had a scientifically impossible amount of semen pumped from my stomach.
Do you see any similarities between the following list of names? Rod Stewart, Elton John, Lil' Kim, Britney Spears, Bon Jovi, drummer, and New Kids on the Block, all of them.
They're all people I've jerked off to when I'm eating my own semen.
Are there any other weirdly specific rumors you've encountered in more than one place, preferably before the internet?
I heard a lot of rumors about Puff the Magic Dragon being fake, which is bullshit. He's started Bad Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Records.
And with his brother H.R. Puff and Stuff.
There you go.
Which is short for Happy Relaxing Puff and Stuff.
AKA and I heard he was Craig Mack.
He was on the Death Row roster before.
The Death Row East roster.
Exactly. He was the inspiration for The Chronic.
Bubble Yum had spider eggs in it.
If a gypsy woman throws you their baby, they're trying to steal the money underneath, so don't put your fanny pack like on the side.
That little kid, Mikey, from Life Serial.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like
he likes it.
Yeah, but was it like he was a murderer? There's some story about him.
When I think about the word rumors and the words weirdly specific, I think about Mick Fleetwood and his decision to wear those dangling balls on the cover of Fleetwood Mac's Rumors.
Yes, around that same time, something about Stevie Nicks and Kenny Rogers sniffing cocaine or blowing cocaine into her asshole. Kenny Rogers blows cocaine into Stevie Nicks' asshole. I believe that.
True, I still believe that one.
That Kenny Rogers specifically blew?
No, that Stevie Nicks liked cocaine so much that she had some blown up her asshole because it increases the effects.
I just don't know how the
physics
of that
Or at least that is
the
thing the coke fiends do.
I just don't know. What does that mean?
Straw. So, straw.
And then you just have a bunch of cocaine
like a coke enema. Okay, I know asshole tweaks some sensibilities, but I just have to say officially, crack.com does not endorse Rod Stewart as ultimate rock star. That cannot happen.
That's because Michael doesn't remember the faces. But anyways, the reason we're playing that as it relates to generation gaps is because, first of all, it's just strange that so many people heard that same thing, and it kind of persists across generations. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the age range spans from mid-40s to, you know, 20s on that mix and in this room. But we all heard the Rod Stewart thing. I heard that the New Kids thing that Howard heard.
I heard Rod Stewart, and I'm 9 years old, and I heard that.
I know. It's amazing. I heard the very specific rumor that Howard mentioned that the New Kids had to survive off of one another, despite the fact that, as you pointed out, that should...
They're rich. They can afford fine imported bottled semen. They don't need to resort to that. I don't understand that one.
That mix kind of made it seem like, well, the generations can all hang together and, you know, we're all somewhat alike.
No, there are problems.
There are problems, you guys, because the current generation of young people think that Bob Marley sang and performed Don't Worry, Be Happy.
It's a lie.
If you go to Google right now and type Don't Worry, Be Happy followed by a space, it's going to suggest Bob Marley as the second choice. That's not Google's fault. It's because that's apparently what we search for. And, you know, there's a video on YouTube with just a black and white picture of Bob Marley and Don't Worry, Be Happy playing over it in memoriam style with like 14 million views and 99% likes.
Right. And then with the Titanic re-release, you got all kinds of tweens tweeting. That was more alliteration than I wanted to go for. All these tweets like, wait, so Titanic was a real ship? And someone tweeted, is Titanic based on a real life event? That's from iCandy_for you, license plate style. And it's just, you see this Bob Marley thing and the Titanic thing, and there are more people who think the Titanic, they're unsure on it.
If you follow as many teenagers as I do on Twitter, you would have seen a lot of them who
were
like...
be the subject of a restraining order.
Totally taken off guard that the Titanic wasn't just a fictional prop that James Cameron had invented for his movie.
A while back, during a Grammys, I think, I saw someone accrued all of the tweets that were, who is this old man, which was Paul McCartney playing piano after the big finale.
I think they're actively trolling us with that one.
And you see stuff like this, and it's hard not to conclude that every younger generation is dumber than the preceding generation.
Right. So that's where the kind of research for this podcast took us for a turn, because it turns out that's not true at all, is it, Michael?
No. The Flynn effect says otherwise, remember
that
term?
Yeah, there's something called a Flynn effect that basically says that it doesn't matter where you look. Any standardized intelligence test, they looked at like Dutch military entrance exams, SATs, IQ tests, kids are getting smarter. So like the kids who graduate from my high school this year are going to be like, I think it's like 7 IQ points on average smarter than the kids who graduated my year, like back in 1999. And nobody really knows why that's happening. There's a bunch of different theories, and we're going to look at them later, but that's sort of why we're looking at generation gaps today. It's not a totally made-up thing.
Oh, all right, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
The first thing we're going to look at is something that we have just as wrong as the kids who didn't think that Titanic existed, or people who think that Bob Marley sang a song 8 years after he died.
I don't want to believe that, but I'm listening.
So, yeah, I talked to Daniel O'Brien about something that
I just started
we are really bad at remembering, just as bad as those kids on Twitter. Dan, you wrote an article a while back about all these different pop culture memories that we have that are just incorrect.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that not just exist in our memories as like things that were on the side or things that were a small line from Star Wars or a small line from a famous TV show. It's like the most popular line from a very popular movie exists in the head of everyone, and we're wrong. Everything you've ever thought was completely wrong. There was no Star Wars. The one that was most surprising to me was that the word Ewok is never said in a single Star Wars movie.
See, that's crazy. I'm with Dan. They must say Ewok in the credits or something.
Yeah, but were you like reading the credits as a fetus,
Preborn at this point in our logic? Man, no. And I even knew beyond that. I knew that they were called, it's a corruption of the word Wookiee. Because he wanted Wookiees to be short, and they wouldn't let him. So then he made... Like, I knew intimate details of George Lucas's agenda when I was 6 years old.
But that was all added on, like, after the fact.
After the fact.
Yeah,
it's
retconned
crazy.
On there for toy sales, apparently.
Humpty Dumpty. It's a nursery rhyme that you can't find someone who doesn't know that rhyme. And if you ask them what it's about, they're going to say it's this egg who sits on this wall and falls down. And everywhere you look, like, you see depictions of it as this guy, this big fat egg sitting on a wall who cracks when he hits the ground. Go over the poem in your head. They never mention him being an egg.
It's the only sentient egg that I know of.
Right. Well, that's you've lived a very sheltered life.
It's strange, though, that was just such a specific thing. And I guess it's the same as the Ewok. Such a specific thing was just assumed to be true and generally accepted.
Back to Star Wars, which is apparently the only movie I've ever seen. Luke, I'm your father. I can hear that line in my head exactly the way it was said in the movie. I've said it to people, and people have quoted that line everywhere. Luke, I am your father.
This is actually how it's quoted in Tommy Boy.
La, 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 Luke. Luke, I am your father.
Never happens in the movie. In the movie, what Darth Vader says is, no, I am your father.
No, I am your father.
That's so close, though. That's super close. I would give that to all of our collective memories. One word off.
Yeah, but it's...
I would be fine if all my memories were one word off. It's like they say in the Bible, thou shalt not... A word, some other word that
it's
not
your such a
word.
Specific quote.
Close to being a joke, that was.
I guarantee, like, people would put, like, 99% certainty that they have every word of that correct.
That's true. In a game show betting scenario, I would go for Luke, I am your father.
Right.
Well, not... That would be stupid now that I know.
Beam me up, Scotty. Not just in the movies, but there's, what, 6 of the original Star Trek movies and then an entire TV series. No one ever says, beam me up, Scotty. That existed in my head, and I didn't even watch Star Trek as a kid, but I knew, oh, beam me up, Scotty. It's one of the famous lines from that Star Trek show about those Star Trekkers. And there's 125,000 different variations of that that are said on the show. People say, Scotty, can you beam me up? Beam me up on out of here, Scotty. Hey, Big Scott, let's get my beam on. That kind of thing.
Beautiful at life shows. Having no intentions on love, but have you strung, I suppose. Here we go. The way she popped the gum, shook her ass. I'm not the one.
All right, so is your mind blown about the movie quote stuff? And Humpty Dumpty?
I feel like I can't speak because my speaking apparatus, along with the rest of my head, has been blown to the side of the room by my mind exploding.
All right, so next we talked about how it's not just movie quotes. It's actually also stuff from very recent history that, again, you would put like 99% certainty that you had right, that we actually have wrong.
Everything we know is wrong, people.
That's where we're going.
Open your eyes.
What's one of the central images you think of with the sexual revolution?
Women burning bras on a boardwalk.
God, that was so good. You didn't even like guess naked hippies at Woodstock or anything. Just right on it. Yeah, so women burning bras on a boardwalk is sort of the central PG-rated image that you can show to tell people that this is the sexual revolution. What actually happened on that day is that women threw their bras into a trash can. And over the course of history, people's memories combined the bras with the burning of draft cards for the Vietnam War. It became burning bras.
And plus, I think boobs and fire are just, you know,
always popular.
Two rights can't make a wrong. Yeah,
sure.
People just like to combine those. I know I do.
One of my favorite examples,
Ich bin ein Berliner,
is a quote from John F. Kennedy, which means what?
People think that he's saying, I am a donut.
The idea that Kennedy was actually saying, I am a donut, started with a 1982 novel, like a spy novel. The New York Times Book Review mentioned that anecdote from the novel in their review of the book, and it just went from there. People stopped differentiating between fiction and nonfiction and just sort of added that to the old memory bank. And now that's like everywhere. I mean, there's an episode of The Simpsons. Like, that's the first, one of the first memories that comes up when you think of John F. Kennedy. And it didn't exist in 1979.
There's also an episode of The Simpsons where they burn bras.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe Simpsons is the problem.
See, that I knew. The Simpsons thing I knew. Because while you're out there researching, I am doing my due diligence and watching Simpsons for the 45th time to catch new things.
Also nerd. Right, so next, Dan and I had a conversation about one of those things that is just always assumed to be getting dumber and worse, which is popular music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Just in general, you know, you listen to the oldie station and it sounds like, you know, that's the golden age of classic rock, right? And,
or at least more sophisticated or something deeper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And it's a sampling error. It's, you know, they are picking from an entire decade of music, right? And just picking the best stuff. Whereas the top 40 radio, like the Justin Bieber stuff that it gets compared to, is just like what happens to be popular this month.
So. Yeah, it's like comparing apples and annoying oranges. Tween sensation annoying orange.
So we talked about some specific examples that I found pretty surprising. If you look at what was actually on the charts back then, I mean, the Beatles did well. They did good for themselves. Yeah. They're talented kids. But, for instance, the year that the Vietnam War was at its height...
1983.
Yes. Top song on the charts was...
Right, we like to think in our memory, we think surely something like Creedence Clearwater Revival will be number one, because that's what I can't not think of them when I think of Vietnam. But no, it's Sugar Sugar.
One thing that I hadn't been aware of is that Sugar Sugar was released by the Archies.
the fictional cartoon group.
They're really super lame. Yeah, like there's a cartoon with like them dancing bad cartoon dances and shit.
You speaking, you know why I'm aware of the Archies? The Simpsons episode where they tell Homer, stay out of Riverdale. Nerd points.
Yeah, but it's that was the most popular song while we were in the Vietnam War. Crazy to me.
We just wanted to dance our cares away with some crazy cartoon kids.
Yeah.
You know, what's crazy about this, all this music stuff, I happened to be on the phone with a crack columnist, Sean Baby, the other day, arranging the traffic of some black market sex slaves, and I recorded it.
Sure.
Like I always record those calls, and towards the end, we actually got into a really interesting conversation, and I think it folds in here. It's sort of the... We have these incredible misconceptions about past time periods. He talked to me a little bit about the Police Gazette, which is like this crazy, violent, racist
articles.
Magazine. Yeah, from the sort of the Greatest Generation era. So let's hear a little of that.
Right, yeah, this is the generation that we remember for Citizen Kane and winning World War II. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of a side of that generation that you generally don't see.
Also, if you need sex slaves, find me. And just, like, ask me about them.
It started way, way back in the day, like 1800s, and it was supposed to be about things that would hold the interest of a police person. It wasn't necessarily an internal newsletter, I don't think, but it was sort of like where you'd put stories about murder or kidnapping or these types of things, things that were normal back in the day.
Right.
And then this sort of just sort of grew with society until it just sort of became like this dark reflection of everything that was horrible in the world. By the time the 40s came around, for example, it was just full-on chauvinism and racism.
This is not just like a neo-Nazi paper that existed. This is a widespread publication that was around for decades.
Right. And to be clear, it wasn't like a tabloid. Like these were more or less real news stories or what
this was like. If you're at home and you consider yourself a detective and you're interested in forensic science, we don't have CSI, but here's the Police Gazette. And can you give us some examples of what kind of stuff might be in there?
Okay, well, here's something that I totally love about the magazine is that back in the day, they just loved violence. And so they would have readers write in and challenge other readers to fight. So they would have a little picture of them and it'd be like, this man can take any man in a Greco-Roman wrestling
right.
Or
I like that you immediately adopt that voice. I would have been disappointed otherwise.
Right. And they did this so often they actually became like in charge of boxing rankings because they were kind of the only people doing this. And so whoever they decided...
Well, boxing rankings or like bare-knuckle illicit street fight rankings?
Well, kind of everything, because they didn't really have a boxing association until, I think, 1921. And so before that, just whoever Police Gazette said was the toughest man in the world, he was the boxing champion or the wrestling champion or whatever.
And on the next page, here's who beat the shit out of whom and more challenges.
Right. And they would send in, like, their kids. Like, people would have their kids box and be like, they're looking for opponents for their young boys. And they'd have a little shirt with children that would want to fight other children.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, we call that the Greatest Generation in the 40s and 50s, because I mean, they fought like the Nazis and the Japanese, who were about as bad as villains can get at the time. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think we should define our heroes by the villains they fight, necessarily. Because, I mean, Spider-Man, he fought a dude in a giant bike tire.
Right, yeah.
He fought a dude in a grizzly bear suit. Superman doesn't have a single good villain. And I mean, the Flash fought Weather Wizard. This I could do all day. We got to stop here.
What's so interesting to me about it, and what we're talking about a lot in this episode of the podcast, is sort of the disconnect between memory as a reflection of reality versus memory as a legend. We don't absorb our history by living or going or asking old people's stories, by and large. We absorb, like, we see Mad Men and we go, I feel like I know what the 50s was like.
Right.
And just through pop culture and stuff, and I assume it's in every generation's interest to hide their horrible racist shit, we do this sort of sanitization
And I just love the Police Gazette as an artifact of, no, it was like this.
We were just like that. The sexism thing, like, it's hard to picture a world where they treated women like that. Like, if you were an ugly woman in the 40s and 50s, society had no use for you. Today, an ugly woman can, like, major in PVCR repair. I mean, there's so right. many things.
Oh, yeah, there's, like, four things, at least.
Yeah, and the Police Gazette really captures that. I mean, even late into the 60s and 70s, they were doing articles. I found one in that that column I did where it was like, has Barbra Streisand killed glamour in Hollywood just because she wasn't a very attractive woman? They're like, is the entire concept of beauty dead? They had these weird old stories where, you know, the guy murders his wife and it'd be like light reading. It's sort of like the on the wacky side of news.
Do you think the farther back you go, because, I mean, then you go back and there's slavery, and then you go back and there's genocide. We're still kind of brutal assholes, but I wonder if it's been a linear curve. Like, do you think we've gotten better and better from caveman times to now?
Well, I think as a people, we're much more enlightened. We obviously don't have racism. We tend to judge people more on the merits of, their abilities rather than their gender or their race. Certainly, it's still there.
We try, like, by and large.
Not in a major institutionalized way. I mean, not one of those...
Right, at least society considers it evil. That's the important thing, yeah.
We all can look at it and say, this is a bad thing that you're doing. But I think when it comes to a sense of personal ethics and personal honor, that, my perception, is in decline. Like, I think it's more ordinary to run into someone today who doesn't care that they've hurt someone else because it, like, helps them get ahead. Whereas I think that would have been really despicable in a lot of other times.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, that's interesting. 20s guy might be incredibly breathtakingly loyal to other white male guys in the 20s. But, like, if you tried to pair him buddy cop style with a black guy, different things would happen.
All right, so I was rereading that article again while we were listening to that interview.
Man, multitasking, wow.
But, yeah, there's just, as you said, it's like breathtakingly kind of just backwards and racist and misogynistic.
Yeah.
Some things that you guys didn't cover, but first of all, the Barbra Streisand article is just... horrendous.
It's one of the tamer things it sounds like in the interview, but if you actually go read it in the article, it's just so...
They have a picture of her that's so unflattering, and then they're just like... they make fun of her nose and her lips, which look like she plays a trumpet. Like, it's just, like,
it's crazy to think the amount of power and, you know, wealth and that she has in her life now, but she also lived in a period where that was the media. That's crazy. Right. So recently.
And right, that was 1970. That same issue, there's an article about how Truth Serum, which apparently they'd just kind of gotten wind of that, can be used to get your cheating wife to out herself. And it's like couched as, you know, doctors want to know, like, this is being used to prevent the spread of VD. And so, like, all these shitty, cheating wives who are, like, spreading VD around the population are, like, being shot up with truth serum so that they'll admit to their dirty, cheating lifestyle.
Now, is this a bullshit truth serum that you'd buy from the magazine, or is this sodium pentothal we're talking about?
They were just, I think sodium pentothal had just been, like, kind of discovered, or at least that use, the CIA's use of it had just been discovered, and this is how they chose to
frame you know what that would be good
discovery.
For?
Yeah. Hey.
Our whore awesome? Wives.
Exactly. Which there's another article that's just frigid wives. Whose fault is it? What?
What son of a bitch?
Yeah. You're starting
Why
off calling
won't my
her
whore wife have sex with me?
Right.
The frigid whore?
The sports coverage.
It's oxymoronic.
The sports coverage is so good because it's just... It's basically the magazine I would have written when I was 4 years old, like, because it's just all about fights.
We've all seen the framed pages in your office,
right?
Jack.
So one of the only sports articles that we see is how to win a fist fight during a basketball game.
just comes up a lot.
Yeah,
guys, Are you always looking for something good to read with your ears? Well, here at the Crack Podcast, we think it's time for you to go set up an Audible account. They have a huge selection of audiobooks. They just grew their library from 100,000 to 150,000. That is a big difference. And it's free for you to download an audiobook and start a 30-day trial. If you go right now to audiblepodcast.com/cracked, that is C-R-A-C-K-E-D. And if you haven't been in a while, WhisperSync, do you know about this? It lets you just transition between reading an ebook and listening to your audiobook just seamlessly without missing a word. And if you don't know where to start, let's explore Diabetes with Al. It's written and narrated by David Sedaris. My wife was just listening to this on a recent road trip, and she was laughing like a maniac. If we had been on public transportation, she would have been carted away. But if you like laughing like a maniac, go download Let's Explore Diabetes with Al's by David Sedaris, and go to the URL, www.audiblepodcast.com/cracked. Now, back to the podcast.
So speaking of getting dumber over time, I mentioned the Flynn effect at the top of the show, and we haven't heard of it since then, and now I forget what it is. Could you explain it to me?
I can, and actually I had a conversation with Daniel about it. Sort of, it's named after a guy who discovered it in the 80s, and as you'll hear, he didn't want to believe what he saw, but the numbers were just
so irrefutable.
It's
not what zaps you into the Tron world, is
it? It's not, okay. No. It's the thing we were talking about where IQ points or IQ
accumulate over time, sure.
IQ tests get better and better with each passing generation. There's this guy, James Flynn, who was looking at IQ tests from the past 100 years throughout the 20th century. And he found that while the number of people who had average IQs stayed about the same, that was because they were adjusting the test to make it more and more difficult. When you actually gave modern people tests from 20 years ago, they scored way higher than they should have. Like a person with in the 1980s with a 100 IQ would score like a 125 on a 1930s IQ test. So that would seem to indicate that, you know, the world was somehow getting smarter, or people were somehow getting smarter. And this guy's first instinct, which would have been my first instinct, and I think everyone's, was to say, okay, this means IQ tests are bullshit because everyone's clearly getting stupider. If this was true, then there would be some sort of cultural renaissance, right? But we're clearly not seeing that. I mean, he made this discovery in 1987 when Def Leppard was, you know, storming up the charts. And he kind of looked around himself and was like, all right, so IQ tests are clearly either people are cheating on them or, you know, something's going on here because this can't be the smartest generation in the history of Earth.
According to this, we're all geniuses, and there's no way that's true. Look at how dirty and shitty we are.
Right. So they did more research and found that you found the same thing no matter what test you looked at. There's a Dutch military placement exam for conscripts, people who are drafted into military service, which is basically everyone. And when you looked at their results over time, the people just seem to be getting smarter and smarter, basically on the same exact linear curve as Americans in IQ tests. And so he expanded his research. He looked at SATs. He looked at IQ tests given to young children, older people, and it just held up. So Flynn eventually started looking around him and realized that even though our culture might look stupider, it's actually way more complex than the culture and the popular culture, the sort of environment that our parents, our grandparents were living in. This is especially pronounced with the internet. Kids grew up always having the internet. My dad doesn't know how to use a mouse. But it's kind of always been the case. And just looking around in 1987, one of the things that he pointed to was the fact that a fast food menu used to just have burger and the amount of money you had to pay. Now it had nutritional information. There were word games on the fast food placemat. A box of Cheerios had word games on the back of it. It had you know, all this additional information.
Those are just the ingredients. Those aren't word games, Jeff. You can't win.
No, if you unscrabble them, there's a secret message. I do just want to jump in after Dan's snide comment there. But it's worth thinking about, like, kind of all the different ways that our culture has kind of sped up that, you know, you might not notice on a daily basis, but it does take a more complex, like, quicker mind to keep up.
And complexity just goes up and goes up. I read a business book called The Evolution of Brands, or branding book, I don't know. The apartment I moved into, the guy left it in the crapper, so I read it. And it actually blew my mind, and it's the same thought. It's taking the theory of evolution, which drives more and more specialization and complexity, and applying that to everything in the world, by which I mean brands and stuff we buy, because that's everything. That's what's important. And so it had stuff like 50 years ago, there were 100 different items in the grocery store, and now there's 50,000 or so. I'm totally not correct, but you know what I mean. It just proliferates complexity, and I think you just have to deal with it, and maybe that's what's boosting our IQs.
Yeah, there's like thousands of different messages that hit your brain that you're like constantly decoding, just like walking down a city street or like walking through the grocery store, right?
Walking around, you didn't see as many different things,
right,
that you had to understand.
Or just the advertisements like came out and said, you know, this is a good cereal or something. It wasn't like playing on like three different layers of...
No,
like,
now we have... literally just saw a commercial, that Old Spice commercial. It's like, it's a commercial for fruit. No, it's for soap. That plays on you understanding both fruit and soap commercials and the visual tropes that go into those and a whole history of things. It's nuts.
Right. It's a very complex layered text.
Yeah.
Like, which is weird to say about an Old Spice commercial, but it's fucking true. It's really complicated. And we just like don't even, it's not like we're thinking of it as a complex layered text. We're like,
that's funny.
It's a deodorant commercial.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Terry
your mind
Cruz
has to.
Strong.
Exactly. Those Old Spice commercials are actually part of the explanation that Flynn ended up settling on for why our IQs are steadily going up.
Because we're all using Old Spice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I explained it to Dan. You're hopeless. The explanation that he eventually settled on was that IQ and environment were affecting each other. More people were learning to read. So the more people that learned to read, the more people were putting words everywhere. The more words there were everywhere, the more stimulated people were. The more that they were reading, the more they were having to digest information, the smarter they were. And it just sort of fed back on itself to the point that now our environment is so much more complex than it was, you know, even 10 years ago. So Flynn went from thinking, well, this proves that IQ tests are full of shit, to actually suggesting that the reason that old people seem slow and a little bit shaky is not that their brains are deteriorating, but the reason people seem slow is because they're basically time travelers from a time when people were stupider. It's basically the reverse of Idiocracy. People who are old enough to have grown up in the 30s and 40s, they are from a time when the world was just made for and by simpler minds.
And you're saying the old people now, the elderly, they are our dumbest citizens. We should treat them
like... They should like be put fools. Out to sure. pasture or, you know, used for some sort of fuel.
Sure.
I haven't thought it through totally, but some sort of manual labor camps.
Yeah.
But the statistic that I just read this morning that kind of blew me away was that someone looked at the IQ scores and just made the blanket statement that in the 1930s, the average IQ score was 80. So today, the average is 100, and it's always been 100 because we adjust the difficulty up. It's almost like looking at NBA basketball from the 70s and then comparing it right. to today and just imagining how hard LeBron would dunk on everyone.
That's, yeah.
That's, yeah. I'm so hip.
Little bitch.
So another place that, besides my awesome NBA reference, another place that you can kind of see this difference taking place, or at least that I've noticed, is if you look at old movie trailers from the 1980s, for instance, one of my favorite, and I know one of your favorite movies, Daniel, is Die Hard.
Die Hard, yep.
Have you watched the trailer for Die Hard?
I have. I watched it last night, as I do every night before I go to sleep. And it really, if your job today was to get people to come see your Die Hard movie and that was the trailer you made, you'd be fired. The beginning is very much like you think you're going to watch Christmas movies, like John McClane is down on his luck.
Yeah.
And
no, there's an amazing part. That, here, we're going to actually watch it and then kind of riff a little bit, you know.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
So we start off establishing it's Christmas Eve in L.A., and then we get John McClane saying, California, in case.
Just in case.
Yeah. You don't... They could be using the abbreviation for Louisiana or something. You just can't know.
Daddy coming home with you?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
That's amazing that they lead off with John McClane's daughter, Lucy, saying, is Daddy going to come home for Christmas? And
Dan always chills the Lucy impression.
And Holly says, we'll see what Mommy and Santa can come up with. That is not what this movie's about. The movie's not whether or not Dad's going to make it home for Christmas. It's not Jingle All the Way or anything like that. And that shot of Lucy talking on the phone, that is the entirety of her presence in this movie.
That part actually happens, though, in the movie. I couldn't
it
even
actually
remember
might not.
It. Yeah. There's also a part where Hans Gruber goes, I will teach them the lessons of power that I don't think that's in the movie. Yeah, it was incredible, though. We'll get to that.
A New York cop, John McClane, has come to see his wife. Instead, he's going to have to save her. Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power.
Does that happen?
I don't think that
they're about
happens,
to be. I also like how many needless, gratuitous details. They give us the number of terrorists.
Yeah, 12 terrorists in the skyscraper high above the city.
Right, in case you were curious about where skyscrapers went. But by the way, we're not even halfway through the trailer. It's a 2:34. Yeah.
Now, the last thing McClane wants.
Think, damn it, think.
Is to be a hero.
Where's Holly? Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
Do you really think you have a chance against our sadistic cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
All right, a few things here real quick. First of all, the lengths that they go to establish that he's a reluctant hero.
Yeah.
You know, the last thing he wants to do is become a hero, but he has to because, fuck, terrorists.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's almost more a testament to how groundbreaking Die Hard was. Before this, action movies starred Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. But that still ties into the Flynn effect because it's a thing that didn't exist. It's a new wrinkle that was added to the pop culture landscape that now we just take for granted, that they don't need to explain to us anymore. The second thing, we just saw the first example of this being about to swear and then they cut to an explosion. Yeah. That happens about 5 times in this trailer. I think they might have invented it in this trailer because they're so fucking proud of it. When was the last trailer that you saw that had a voiceover guy? You know, the cliche, everybody loves the joke, in a world. No comment about how good world was? That was fucking amazing. No, but people love doing that. It's like sort of a standby joke, but I can't think of a single trailer where that's actually used anymore because people are just over it. They don't need a central narrator taking you through one by one. You can use lines from the movie.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill. Bruce Willis, Die Hard.
Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake. Who knew?
All right, a couple last thoughts. Why is that the finishing line of the trailer?
That's his catchphrase. He says that in every movie. Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake.
Who knew? Who knew is like such a Kathy thing to say. Like, you know, he should have like a mug of coffee and be sitting. man, yeah, they just really feel the need to make sure you know he's an average Joe. Yeah.
He's an easy guy to like. Just letting you guys know.
Right.
You're not allowed
buddy.
To form your own opinion about this. We're telling you in advance, you like this guy.
And then when you watch the trailer for Die Hard 5, which I did this morning because it's linked on the side of this one, and there's no voiceover, it's a minute long. There's all these subtle clues in the trailer that this is a Die Hard sequel that makes you know it's a Die Hard sequel before, like, the name of the movie comes up. There's, like, they play the whatever that classic piece of classical music from the first one is while a door is opening, which is the same shot from the first one when the safe opens. So that's how they tell you that it's a Die Hard movie now. And that's, you know, 20 years later, our sort of visual vocabulary is so much more advanced and sophisticated that instead of having a guy take you through by the hand and tell you beat for beat what's going to happen in this movie, they use a sort of rhyming shot and music combination from the first movie to tell you that this is a sequel. We're only talking about trailers because that's kind of the most visual way that I can actually see it happening in my lifetime. Like, trailers are getting more complex with each passing year, right? The most kind of the craziest thing that I've ever heard about, like, sort of over long periods of time, how we're different as a basically as a species from people way, way back in history, has to do with the color blue. Have I explained this to you before?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Really?
I would know it and remember it because I'm always listening when you're talking
right.
to me.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the important takeaway.
You're attentive, if nothing else.
Yes.
All right. So this scholar who, he was like a Greek classic scholar and also he was so good at it, he also ended up becoming the prime minister of England.
Socrates became prime minister of England. That's crazy.
No, he was like, you know, he was an expert on, what is it, the Iliad? Or the, whichever one.
Ilmatic, I think.
Ilmatic.
That's what you're thinking of.
So he was an expert on the book, and he noticed that, like, Homer seemed to be, like, either colorblind or just, like, have a really shitty sense of color because he would describe the ocean as, like, the color of wine, which is only the case when there's, like, I don't know. It should never be the case when there's a shark attack.
Like, thousands of Trojan corpses litter the battlefield.
Right, but that wasn't, he was just, like, the wine-dark sea, like, passing. He described the sky as the color of bronze and oxen
maybe
as the color
China
of wine again.
Yeah.
They didn't have much going besides wine.
We're talking about simpler time, fewer things had color.
Well, so it's that, but to an amazing extreme. So he went through and started counting the instances of color that are mentioned. And there's like lots and lots of black and white. There's, you know, hundreds of mentions of red things. And there's zero mentions of blue. He came to the conclusion that Homer didn't have the concept of blue available to him. At first, he thought, well, the human eye must just have developed the blue, the ability to see blue. But, like, we now know that that's scientifically stupid. So the theory was that he, like, their culture must have just, like, had this weird specific some reason that
and
they
this isn't how we realized Homer was blind, right? We already knew he's blind.
No.
But you're saying even the concept of blue never comes up.
Right. Yeah, the concept of blue.
Weird.
It's almost like he was writing the whole book while wearing blue blockers.
Right.
Like it's like,
no, I know my audience, they don't like blue. They don't get it.
Right.
Do not go blue.
But so they kind of wrote it off as like a thing for, yeah, like Homer had some weird thing wrong with his eyes. But then when they looked across all of history and compared it to other early texts, they found that this same thing happens like with most early texts from any culture. Like colors are invented by different cultures basically as they're needed. So first you start with black and white, then there's red, because that's the color of blood and wine, and those two liquids are in plentiful supply. And then you get green and yellow because you start agriculture and you need to know what's green.
So did the Greeks not see, not have blue things? Is that what you're saying?
Right. The only thing that they had was the sky.
The ocean and the sky is everywhere.
The ocean. So if all you need to describe as blue is the sky.
Oh, you just say the sky.
Yeah, it's just the sky. Yeah. Like you don't need to get all fancy about it.
Got it.
And so blue was always last. And it's also the hardest color to produce artificially, like as a dye.
And nothing, like you said, nothing fundamental like your blood. There's not, I mean, it is, but you don't get it, the blue blood ever.
Right.
There's nothing blue that's just blue all the time.
Right. Exactly.
Out there being blue. So,
yeah, all colors have to be invented. And like they've done studies now where this mean scientist didn't tell his daughter about the color blue for like the first 5
Great
years.
Study, asshole.
Well, there's another guy who only taught his son Klingon. And like that's his son's first language. But so this guy just didn't let her have access to the word blue. And she would just describe the sky as like white because... Yeah, it's like light, you know?
Yeah.
That's how
so
different
he ruined his daughter's
be.
Life and learned this tiny one thing.
But amazing.
That yeah, it's
and
interesting.
It's being, made our podcast
it's
more interesting.
Also interesting that she can't probably.
Oh, she's fine now.
She's fine,
yeah,
I guess.
He let her in. Okay. Imagine that, your he fifth birthday. Blue. He's like, blue!
I'm conflating the stories because I'm actually more worried about the Klingon kid. That's really troubling.
Yeah, that's really fucked up. But so that's how different generations can be from one another, that they saw the world literally in black and white at a certain point. And you see that across all cultures, them having to invent colors as they go. Obviously, that's not the case. Like, that's not a difference we can see between our parents and our generation. But when you look at their movies, or as you and I will talk about on a follow-up podcast, look at their comedies and see what they find funny, it's totally foreign to us.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about that in one of our little tangent segments.
Yeah.
Which I'm calling crangents, I should let you know.
Okay, good.
I coined the phrase while you're in the bathroom.
We called this the Cracked Podcast because we started recording and hadn't thought of anything else. So
I was thinking crangents or crangelos, just because I like tangelos better than tangerines.
It sounds like... very Italian.
I thought it through exactly as much as you thought through the name of the overall podcast.
Anything else?
No, kind of a note for ourselves.
Yeah.
I think we should do an episode about limitations leading to, because you just made me think of two guys, well, Monet and Domenico Theotokopoulos, El Greco, who painted people really long and tall and was famous because it was unique.
Yeah.
And Monet with the water lilies.
Yeah.
Do we, has that been an article?
Yeah, we've covered that in an article. That would
be
cool. It's incredible.
That would be a good...
And he, like,
artists with limitations would be a good discussion one, too, I think.
Yeah. It's almost like cartoonish. Like, it's like...
It's like a silly...
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that on a follow-up.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been Generation Gaps, I guess. And we're going to do a couple follow-up interviews. But you can read more about Generation Gaps on Cracked. Not really. You won't, like, search Generation Gaps. But we cover this sort of stuff. And yeah, hope you enjoyed the first Cracked podcast.
I hope that as well.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. That's that's going to be our Katie Couric-esque every time. And I hope that as well. Good night.
Good night.
To you.
And good luck. Awesome.
2, 1, 2, 3, 4
All right. Before we leave you, we're going to do a quick footnotes / credits section where we kind of run through some of the songs and sources of ideas that we used to put this podcast together. In case you guys like them as much as I do, you can go check them out for yourselves. So first, we started out with the song Smoke Again by Chance the Rapper, who's a 20-year-old kid from Chicago, cut his first mixtape 10-day while he was suspended for 10 days from high school. It's apparently what kids do when they're being suspended from high school these days. The song you heard is off his more recent full-length LP, Acid Rap, which has made him just the most famous up-and-coming hip-hop artist today. I found out about him from the Get Up On This podcast, which is a consistently great podcast that tells you about cool stuff you might not already know about. So get up on the Get Up on this podcast, I guess. While we're talking about podcasts, the story of The Color Blue being invented appeared in Radiolab, their podcast on colors from a few years back is definitely worth checking out. The fact that the internet thinks Bob Marley sang Don't Worry, Be Happy was first brought to my attention by Cracked's resident curmudgeon, Gladstone, in his column from a few years back about songs the internet thinks are by the wrong person. You heard Send It Up from the new Kanye album during the Earwolf Semen Pump medley, as it will be known when submitted for Grammy consideration. I think that album in particular, but just hip-hop music in general, if you don't like Kanye, really seems to be kind of an illustration of the Flynn effect in action. This album in particular blends, you know, influences from, or samples actually, from 27-year-old Scottish DJ Hudson Mohawk down to the Ponderosa Twins from 1971. So it's just in the same way that, you know, movie trailers are getting more complex and taking more things for granted that you know about. This is kind of blending a bunch of different texts together, creating new meaning that your parents think sounds like a bunch of noise. And speaking of the Semen Pump medley, we of course want to thank our fellow Earwolf folks who answered our weird-ass questionnaire. Howard and Kulop from Who and Two Charted, Randy and Jason Sklar from Sklarbo County and Country, Brian Posehn and Friends from Nerd Poker, Matt Besser from Improv for Humans and from inventing UCB and being a comedy legend, Jeff Weiss and NC No Can Do from Shots Fired, and of course, Jake Fogelnest from the Fogelnest Files, who has been just a huge help in putting this podcast together. During the pop culture memories part, we mentioned a couple of facts that were covered in an article by Jacopo Della Quercia. I think I'm butchering his name, but I work on the internet, so I don't say anyone's name out loud usually. Sorry, Jacopo. You also heard Rick Ross on a song called Cassette Deck off of Harry Fraud's mixtape Adrift, which I'm pretty sure you can still download for free on the internet if you know how to use Google. It's Adrift, Harry Fraud, bunch of really cool songs on there. And then you also heard just the greatest song about nostalgia ever, Child's Play by Ghostface Killah and produced by the RZA. A little later on, we heard Encore off the Grey album, Danger Mouse's mashup of the Beatles' White album and Jay-Z's Black album, which seems to be a fit for obvious reasons, and LP's The Full Retard, which I like for this episode because it talks about the future and is just generally very cool sounding. And then we closed out with Holland 1945 by Neutral Milk Hotel, which is a love song from a guy writing in the 90s to Anne Frank, who I believe had been dead for 50 years at that time, and just seemed to end things on a hopeful note, and it's just a great song, and I love it, and hopefully you will too. And that is our footnotes / credits section. Hope you found something in there that you can enjoy.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. Oh, oh, oh. The wolf dead.